Welcome to the Innovation World Podcast, your go-to source for all things innovation, invention, and entrepreneurship. Our website is www.innovationworld.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Innovation World Podcast series. My name is Julia Shively, and I'm the founder of Innovation World and the co-founder of the Global Innovation Field Trip. I'd like to introduce my co-host, Jake. Would you like to share where you are?
Yes. My name is Jake Mendelson. I am in Connecticut, which is halfway between New York and Boston, and in the United States. And I'm very, very happy to be here.
Great. Thank you, Jake. Just a couple announcements before we get started on today's wonderful podcast. I wanted to share that this podcast is coming as a result of the U.S. National Innovator Challenge. And we have one of the top innovators with us today, and we will let her introduce herself in just a couple minutes. But we want to congratulate her for her efforts and hope that she continues her work as well. Other announcements, we are looking forward to the next Global Innovation Field Trip. It takes place October 14th and 15th, and it will begin on Saturday the 14th at noon Eastern time and conclude Sunday the 15th at noon Eastern time. It is all done over a Zoom webinar and live streaming to YouTube. So if you're interested in being a presenter, reach out to globalinnovationfieldtrip.org and we can see if there's still space for you to present. Or if you'd like to watch it, just go up to YouTube, search for Global Innovation Field Trip and click on live sometime between Saturday the 14th and Sunday the 15th of October. It's a great opportunity for people around the world to share their innovation stories. It costs nothing to do it other than the time you will put into it. And it's just a wonderful learning experience and cultural experience for everybody that participates in it. Jake, did you want to say anything about Global Innovation Field Trip
Challenge? I also wanted to add something about the Global Innovation Field Trip. We are recording this in August of 2023. So Julie, when she was talking about October, she means October of 2023. But we run the GIF programs four times a year in January, in April, in July, and October. So whenever you are listening to this, there will be another Global Innovation Field Trip coming up shortly. And so you want to go to that website and register and get a chance to present. The other thing that is happening is also very exciting is we have students who've done incredible jobs and all kinds of interesting innovations. We're going to hear from one in a few minutes, but this is part of the U.S. National Innovation Challenge. But other countries are running similar programs, and we have created a Global Innovation Challenge, which is an opportunity for selected students from different countries to get together via Zoom and give presentations about what they are doing. So, the deadline for registration for that is going to be September 10th, 2023. It's coming up shortly. And if you want more information, you can go to inventfuture.global. That's the website. And you will see a link and you can register. And that'll be a wonderful opportunity for creative, innovative students to share their ideas. So now I'm done, June.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. And in fact, the student that we're going to introduce you to in just a minute, not only is a top innovator from the National Innovator Challenge, but she is one of the students that has advanced to the Global Innovation Challenge. So very exciting. Congratulations. And we look forward to seeing you there again.
But she has not registered.
She has not registered yet? Well, she was going to do it right after this podcast, okay, I know.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, I think it's time that we meet our young innovator. And if you would not mind, introduce yourself. Tell us where you are, what grade you're in, and tell us about this wonderful product you've developed or in the process of developing, I guess.
Hi, my name is Aditi Padamishra, and I'm a rising senior in Connecticut, so I'm pretty close to Jake, actually. And I like to think of myself as a real-world problem solver. So from a very young age, around second grade, in fact, I've been looking at issues in my everyday life and my parents' everyday life, and kind of using that as a catalyst to think outside of the box at solutions for our modern everyday problems. So, what the project that I was focusing on for the past 4 years in high school, and the problem that I was working on, is this overarching issue with accessibility and prosthetic technology. So, when we think of our everyday lives, something that's become very crucial to how we live is our smartphones. And smartphone technology has evolved a lot over like the past 2 decades to the point where we're not really concerned about our phone. Hopefully, we're not concerned about our phone crashing on us in the middle of a call, or running out of battery in like 2 minutes. With 50% supposedly still being there in your battery. So there's a certain dependability that's with our smartphone that allows us to use it so variedly and so frequently in our lives. That type of dependability is not mirrored in prosthetic technology, which is strange because prosthetic technology is very crucial to those who use it, even though the subset of people affected who might need a prosthetic is very small. All of those people in that demographic need it. So you're affecting a very small community very, very significantly. So there's definitely a great need for development in prosthetic technology. And even with all the developments we've done in various factors in terms of materials and manufacturing and different ways of joint mechanism making joint mechanisms, there's still like issues with accessibility and particularly cost, which is pretty obvious to most people, as well as battery duration. So you can pay thousands upon thousands of dollars and still only get a prosthetic limb that might work for 4 to 6 hours if you're lucky. That's not good. That's a very low number, especially when you think about how difficult or how different life would be if you don't have one of your limbs. It's a very strange thing to think about, but it's very real for a lot of people. So, what I wanted to look into was a way of dealing with these two issues of cost and battery duration, in one fell swoop. So, kill two birds with one stone. What I looked into is something that's a bit more similar to the way we naturally work. So, prosthetic technology is a very varied sector. So, finding a way to focus in on what really needs to change can be quite daunting. I was inspired by biomimetic systems, so ways that we things work in nature as they are right now. The way human muscles work are that joints are able to move because of muscle contractions, and these contractions are because of fluid movement, which is our blood. And so what happens here is that in our body, blood is moved from one place to another, and so you have a deficiency of blood in one area in order to have the contraction of your muscle in another area. And so this way, we're able to cycle blood throughout our body and get whatever motion we need at the moment we need. A lot of prosthetic technology kind of takes a very mechanical, very standard procedure in controlling the joints, which is pretty much just like using motors and like finagling them a little bit so that they work the way you intend to. It's very simplified, but very saturated technology. And what I did was, based on fluid movement in our own arms and our own legs, I decided to look into fluid movement for a prosthetic. And the main idea is that there is, oh, I thought I accidentally muted myself, sorry. The main idea is that there is a motor, and then the motor is able to power a pump. And that pump is basically able to do what our heart does for blood, and that is move liquid from one place to another at very high speeds, at very high pressures, which is what we need. And through that fluid displacement, we're able to move fluid between two pistons, and the pistons work against each other. One goes up, the other goes down. And these pistons are looped around a pulley, and that pulley is your main joint. Think of like your ankle, how you have like the ball socket for your ankle joint. That's what the pulley is acting as. And so by changing the motion of the cylinders, you're able to turn the pulley and therefore create angle movement. And all of this is done decoupled from the actual motor. So the strength of the motion of the ankle joint or the speed is not dependent on the motor type or the motor's own specifications. The motor can be generic. What's important here is the fluid motion. This is a very different path to joint actuation and joint movement and prosthetics than what is currently the standard in the commercial prosthetic industry. So that's kind of like the basic technical overview of what I was working on for the past 4 years.
Wow. So they're teaching you lots of interesting things in high school these days. You're certainly the only person I know that's going to high school that knows anything about prosthetics.
It's
So why this problem? What was your inspiration for it?
this I this is a little embarrassing to say, but in seventh grade, there was this show on Netflix called Voltron, and I was obsessed. There was like a character that had the same birthday as me and everything, and I loved it. It's a sci-fi show, and it's a reboot. So Voltron was like a kid's show back in the 90s or 80s. I don't remember. But the reboot was really good, and I loved everything about it. The animation was great, characters, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, because it was a sci-fi show, there was a lot of really cool technology. And the thing with Voltron that I liked was that a lot of the technology seemed like things that could be feasible. And those things were on a spectrum. Obviously, gravity that you can turn on and off is fundamentally not going to happen. But there was some other things like holograms with memories that we hear about in the news. Like I remember seeing an article a few months ago about something that I saw in Voltron back in seventh grade. So I'm like, oh, wow. There's this one particular character in Voltron, and his name is Shiro, and he has a prosthetic arm, and it's really cool, and he uses it in all the battle scenes and whatnot. And I saw that, and I'm like, wow, that is really cool. And that kind of got the question in my head of, like, what's preventing us from reaching that level of technology? What is hindering us in our development of prosthetics? And that was kind of a rabbit hole of a lot of, not necessarily Wikipedia pages, but certainly a lot of journal articles filled with lots of jargon and kind of like snowballed from there. So, yeah, this idea was because I was a nerd in seventh
What a great story, though. I mean, how amazing. Don't you think the writers of that program would be so thrilled to know what came from that? I think I have daughters that might have watched that show too. They didn't pick up and do what you did as a result. So you're definitely an anomaly, probably, with the show, but what a great story. I was wondering if you had a relative or somebody else that was impacted and had needed a prosthetic and had trouble with it. So who have you been working with on the design, or is it all just you?
A lot of the stuff has been happening in my basement, a lot of the like figuring stuff out. I am very lucky to have a very nice and supportive mentor. He's from the University of Michigan, and he's kind of there to answer my 1 a.m. questions about like how stuff works. Am I doing this correctly? Does this make sense? So he's very important to my journey. I also did have a mentor previously, back in sophomore year, and he has history with like hydraulics and computer fluid design systems and modeling those, and he was really monumental to like the foundations of my project. So I have had help, yes, but for the
So,
most part, it's
I'm sorry, did you say University of Michigan?
yeah, University
So
of
how
Michigan.
are you connecting with this person? Is it all virtual? Okay.
It's all it's I do most of the work myself, and then if I have doubts, I go to my mentors. So they're kind of like the catch-all, kind of fill in the holes that I have in my
So
knowledge.
I think this is really important for you to share with other students or other innovator wannabes is how do you reach out? How do you connect with them? How do you find that mentor to begin with so that you can get this expertise whenever you need it?
Oh, sure. So the way I met my current mentor from the University of Michigan was one of the papers that he co-authored was very, very important to my background knowledge. It's a paper that I still look back to oftentimes, even 4 years into this road. And so I kind of just looked at like maybe the first five authors listed for that article, and I emailed all of them. And if I did some research into all of them, of course, and I looked into like what they specialized in, what resources they might have, what exactly could I go to them to ask about. And from there, what I did was when you email, you have a couple options on how it's going to turn out. You either get an email back and it's positive, get an email back and they like reject you for one reason or another, or they don't respond, which is the most common one. They professors usually got a lot of emails. It's understandable. Spam emailing works. It's annoying. You might feel like you're being a pain, but it works. That's how I got my current mentor. And don't be afraid to reach out to people. There's like, I know I felt a lot of apprehension, like these guys are industry experts. Who am I to approach them? Like as a high schooler in like 10th, 11th grade, who am I to approach them and ask about all this? They're all really welcoming. And student research is something that's definitely very much encouraged. So even if a mentor might not have the time to take you on, you can ask them if they know anyone else. And so from one article, you can create connections to a lot of different places. Journal articles are a great way to figure out who to look for. There's also just like regular news articles on science topics. If you skim like things like science or popular mechanics or whatnot, you'll probably find a lot of researcher names from there too that you can contact. So there's a lot of avenues. It's just figuring out the angle to attack it from.
Very good. I have a question about the mechanics. So essentially you have two pistons and they're going in opposing directions.
So the pistons are vertically aligned and they're in between them is the motor and the pump. And so you can think of it, you can think of them kind of forming an H where like the middle bar portion is, or maybe an A actually, an A is better, where the two like sides of the letter A are the pistons. And then like the motor is like the top curve of the A, and then the little bar in the middle is the pump. And so what happens is the motor is moving fluid from one cylinder into the other. And so that creates a vacancy in one of the cylinders. And then what happens is there's pistons, right, in the cylinders that move up and down accordingly. And so they kind of work in, I think a good way of describing it would be a vacuum, where because there's a vacancy in the fluid, they're being pulled up to fill in that space. And then simultaneously on the other piston, because there's more fluid in there, the piston is being pushed down. So
I have a question then. If you have this motor and the pump is pumping in the fluid into one piston and then pumping it into the other piston to get the opposite motion, couldn't you just have one of the pistons with the fluid under pressure, and then you have a valve, and the valve then opens up and the fluid from the high pressure piston goes into the low pressure piston, thus moving that one, and when it's moving then the other piston has the low pressure, you know what I mean?
So yeah, that's pressure. You're kind of getting that valve pressure difference as it is, because there is a little bit of like a suction force because you are reducing the pressure of the fluid in one cylinder and the other. My goal was to get rid of as many tubes and valves as possible in this design. So every tube connection and every valve opens up a possibility of a leakage. And
Mm-hmm.
additionally, it's just one of the reasons why hydraulic motion is just not popular in prosthetics is because hydraulics are very powerful, but they do have their own set of like general hydraulic systems. Usually need like a tank for the fluid, and you need a lot of valves to control pressure and flow. And so I wanted to make my design as independent of all those as possible. So my design has no tubes. All of the fluid is moved throughout the actual housing. So the housings are like the plastic parts holding everything together.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, that's I didn't see that. You're right. So you've avoided all the leaking tubes. You just have one main. So the fluid in the main housing is all under. That's controlled by the pump, and the pump just maneuvers from one piston to another. Ooh, that's actually clever. Very good.
So there's no, like every additional like valve or tube would be an extraneous variable. So
Yeah.
I've kind of eliminated those.
That's very interesting. That is a very interesting idea. Did you think of that? How, where did that come from?
I was sitting there like, man, there's a lot of wasted like plastic holding things together. And I don't like, where would I fit tubes in this to begin with without making it too big? Because that's another thing. Physical size is a very big constraint. And one of my goals with the paw, with this prosthetic, was it, I wanted it to be something that would be suitable for children. So right now, when it comes to prosthetics for children, it's a lot of retrograding components for adults. For children, and just kind of like making it work. There isn't anything focused for children because the idea is like they grow up so fast. It's both monetarily and re material wise not feasible to give them like a full-fledged prosthetic every like 2 inches that they grow. This is a design that grows up with you, basically. If you have a young child who needs a prosthetic, you can essentially keep everything the same except the plastic parts, which are the easiest to replace, in fact, because it's all 3D printed. So all of this makes it so that you essentially take the main structure and it keeps on going with the child as they grow up, and you just change like the fittings,
Well,
and pieces.
I would think just the shaft on the piston, that as the child grows, you just change the shaft on the piston, the basic part. If I can just make a recommendation, when you initially described this, I was thinking of it as a traditional hydraulic with all the different, tubes and valves and everything else. I think you really need to stress that when you're talking to people that this is turned inside out,
Everything's self-contained.
Yeah, that is the real key. That's pistons have been around for a long time, but this is a totally unique way of doing that. Wow, very good. Very
Thank
good.
you.
Jake failed to mention he was is a retired engineer, which is really helpful. Thus, he gets all the tough questions for this.
Oh, no, I listen, I've
This is
seen
excellent.
100 hydraulic systems, and you're absolutely right. They all have the external, tubes, and they all leak. A hydraulic leaks like mad. I mean, and this is a much better way of doing it.
So, what is the casing? I'm not sure if I'm using the right word, made of.
Casing, housing, I call it housing when I write it down. It's pretty much so like the cylinders are part of the housing because they're all made the same way. Pretty much like 90% of the design is 3D printed. I'm currently using a 3D printed plastic for the housing. However, the ideal material would be like an aluminum alloy. It's lightweight and thinner, but it gives the same durability. It's just like for
Can you do
prototyping
that,
purposes,
3D
I use
printing?
plastic.
Yes. Oh,
Can you
yeah.
3D print with aluminum alloys?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So what's stopping you from doing that now? Is it just the expense
Just,
of it?
yeah,
Money.
personal. It's easier to work on a larger scale with like plastics because they do cost less and they take less time and they're more
I'm thinking
accessible.
about like the bike wreck and things like that, or that, you know, car wreck, bike wreck, something like that. Is aluminum alloy going to be hold up better than a plastic's going to, you know, because then I'm assuming that things will start leaking when you get into some kind of altercation with it.
That those are, when it comes to situations like those, they're a bit on the extreme side. Like, no matter what, you're going to be dealing with damage in a wreck. At which point, like right now, my focus is everyday usage. So I want to look into capabilities of human interfacing so that you don't, it's seamless. You think about what you want to do and it happens just like it does with your natural limbs. I want to think about different ways of power management. So right now, I'm reducing, I mentioned the issues of cost and battery duration, right? But I never really explained in depth how this design fit deals with those issues. So for cost, because so much of it is 3D printed, 3D printing is a lot cheaper than, like, even if I were to switch out to the aluminum alloy, 3D printing is still a lot cheaper than general manufacturing practices. I think currently my cost estimate is around $1,800 for the prototype I made. If I it were to be a commercial product and I accounted for all of those extra fees changing in different materials to match what I think would be better, I would be looking at like a 2200 to 2500 price range. That is really cheap. The price range you usually look at with insurance is $5,000 to $30,000. So 3D printing, because so much of the design is 3D printable, you're really solving a lot of issues with cost. And then all of the other components, like, they can be generic. There isn't really an issue with brands or with specifications. You just need like and I'm talking about like the motor and the pump, which can't be 3D printed. For those parts, you don't have to worry about getting very expensive high-tech components. I'm using stuff off of eBay and it works. So it's like, that's how the design just inherently allows for so much more flexibility in how you manufacture and how you put what components you have to purchase that it's really easy to cut down costs. As for battery duration, so the motor I'm using runs at high speeds but low torques. Or sorry, no. Yes, the motor I'm using does run at high speeds but low torques. I should have prefaced that by saying that generally in prosthetics, motors run at high torques, low speeds. And so the difference here is that you use less power in high speed, low torque than a high torque, low speed. And because I'm not using the motor as like a direct way of powering the ankle joint, which a lot of Jake, you said you're an engineer. There it's gear transmissions in a lot of prosthetics, which is really just like finding ways to slightly amplify the motor's own power, which ends up using a lot of battery. With the way my design works, I'm able to, for comparison, the maximum amount of current that my design draws to give the same amount of force output as a comparable design from eMichigan, the maximum for my design is the same as their average current draw.
No.
So
You're absolutely right. And the whole reason that normal prosthetics are using high torque is because they've got to move the entire limb.
yeah.
You don't have to do that. You're just increasing the pressure in the fluid. So you could, frankly, be using very small, very low power motors to do this. And it's great. If I could just make another comment, you don't give up on 3D printing. There's lots of different types of 3D printed materials. That are even stronger than your normal aluminums. You can embed, carbon fibers into it and get incredible strength. But you do want to do some research on the interaction of the material and the human body. There are some materials that are rejected, some materials that are accepted by the human body. There's all kinds of research, and you need to talk to some people in that field to find out what might be the best. But don't give up on 3D printing.
3D printing is definitely going to be very pivotal to the future.
Yeah.
Carbon fiber is actually very common because it's like lightweight. It's very durable. A lot of the like sports prosthetics, so the ones that look like those are carbon fiber because they're really flexible. You don't need a lot of mechanical actuation in sports prosthetics. Aluminum alloy is just like pretty standard, and it's very popular for casings and prosthetics too. So that was what I was leaning towards because it is kind of an industry standard other than carbon fiber. And I felt like carbon fiber might be.
But be careful. It's an industry standard because that's what we used to use when I was young, you know, and that gets carried on. The world has changed, and you need to look people who are 45, you know, years old, look them in the eye and go, that was great when you were 20, but this is not, you know, the same world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've written down a whole list of questions while you guys were talking. So okay. I'm gonna ask up. Did Voltron's appendage make noise? Did it sound like hydraulics? And does this sound like hydraulics when you use it?
That's a very, very interesting question. I've yet to hear that.
Don't you think that would be cool? That sound of the hydraulics.
Well, I think there's an appeal of being like a cyborg, definitely. I know I thought that was really cool as a kid. There is a slight noise from the motor, but the actual fluid motion is, there's no noise.
Okay.
It's just
the motor running. Julie, the noise you heard in that is the fluid leaking. You know, when you have leaking. She avoided that.
Oh, good, good. So
if you hear noise, that's an issue.
That's right.
This could get to the point where when you're selling it to somebody later, you're selling them then the file to make that next size up for their kid. And they just, you know, as 3D printers become more readily available for people all over, that they would do that? Or would this be so custom that, you know, your shop would have to put it together for them?
And this would be, so the design, I've heard a couple ideas on how this would be reach the commercial market involving like reaching out to insurance companies and like health providers. The general idea is that prosthetics are always custom made. There's no such thing as mass producing a prosthetics because it really like it is very much like you need one, you get it made for you, which certainly is one of the reasons why they're so expensive. It is very personalized. I would expect it to be something like where it doesn't matter who prints it, it's what it's printed like from. Like it doesn't matter what the company is, or it doesn't matter who's providing the service. It's, do they have the materials and the printers to print what you need? Are you able to get all the components and put them together in a way that works in a good amount of time for the user? And that's just kind of, as for things related to like getting measurements and like fittings and all of that, there are doctors that specialize in all this. So that would be more related to actually who you're going to medically. So there's a lot of different areas you'd be pulling from.
Has anyone tried your device yet? Has it ready for that?
No, it is very hard to get clearance or willing participants as a high schooler. That is something that I've been thinking about for like 2 years now. Human participants, I would first have to figure out, like, I would first have to find a lab that's willing and then find participants, which is...
I think if I wanted to get the newest, coolest type limb, I would be willing to. I mean, unless you're going to hurt them for some reason, I think that would be easy to find people willing to try it.
There's just a certain, it's certainly something I would like to pursue. There's a couple holdbacks, I think, in terms of whether labs would be willing to support it, because should, like, on like the off chance something goes wrong, someone isn't happy with what ha like whatever the procedure is, like there's issues with that, you know.
What do
There's
you
like a
need to
little,
do?
it would, I would need to contact a lab, preferably nearby, so in Connecticut, which I have tried. So because I'm in New Haven, Yale is really close by. Yale does have a prosthetic lab, so I've contacted them. I've gotten the cold sh shoulder so far. UConn also, up in near stores, so the main campus, UConn has labs related to this. I've contacted them, not really gotten anywhere. So it would first getting a it would first involve getting a lab that agrees to help me test, would agree with giving me, you do need like specialized equipment to collect data, which has been a hurdle for me at home because some of that equipment is very hard to get your hands on. So I would need access to that, and then I would actually need to start looking for participants, which there's plenty of hospitals, but I would like to work on a wide age range. I'm not sure if I would have access to that because, like I mentioned, this is something that I'm doing with children in mind as well. It would kind of be moot point if I couldn't test at least one child, right?
But that's in the long run.
Yeah, that this would very much, yeah, this would be a very long process.
What you might want to do is contact a veterinarian, and they do all kinds of surgery on animals, and you're going to have less legal restrictions. And
Great
yes,
idea.
if it works on a dog, there's a chance it could work on a human. So I'm just saying that you might be able to find them a little bit more willing to experiment with you, because they don't have all the issues that a Yale has or a UConn has as far as restrictions and everything.
Yeah.
So have you started a patent for any of this yet?
I have a provisional patent.
Okay. You need to really talk to a patent attorney,
Yeah,
because
it's
a
yeah.
provisional patent is not
Not
really
gonna.
a patent.
I do believe that that's one of the things that the National Innovator Challenge, she's got a consult with
I do.
JD Kuvner Group.
Use it.
Pretty sure.
Use it. Get some advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I'm planning on taking full advantage of that. That's a really nice thing to have access to, the consultation with a patent attorney.
Yeah. This is so cool. Someday, Jake and I will be, if we still remember by then, we might be too old. If we remember, have our faculties about us still, we'll be talking about, we met her. We got to talk to her. And now she's like the world's renowned, you know, limb expert. And
Listen, I'm going out this afternoon and use my chainsaw and some brush. I used to be afraid of doing that, and now I'm not afraid anymore.
he was a willing subject for it. I have a thought too. You know, we think a lot about replacement limbs for people, but how about just give us a third leg or a third arm or something? Because think about how much more productive a person could be also if they just had more extremities, whether they were missing any or not, right?
Where would it go? Where would that third limb
Like
go?
my elbow, you could attach another, I don't know. You'd have to think of that.
Like that.
That is certainly an
I'm
interesting thought.
always carrying stuff in and going, I only have two hands. Well, why is that, Adita? It could be that I could have more if you would like get to work a little bit faster on this.
Adita, I can be in your house in 55 minutes.
You better have a tourniquet. So I did you have any more questions, Jay? Because I have one that I like to just
No,
end with.
go right
All
ahead.
right. So before we wrap up, I like to ask students, if you had the opportunity to go to lunch with anybody in the world, who would you pick to go with and why would you pick that person?
Okay. So I would answer, there is a professor at an MIT lab, and his name is Professor Hugh Herr. And he is insane. So he works on prosthetics. He works on specifically like human interfacing. So like kind of like the biological connection with prosthetics and controlling them. And he's a double amputee himself. So he's worked on his own legs and like finding technologies to suit his own needs. And he has this really cool perspective of both like an innovator in his field, but also a user of his own technology. He's just a really cool guy.
Have you met him?
I have not. I've reached out to his lab before.
Have you written to him?
I have.
Okay.
I first heard of him, God, when I was in middle school, maybe, on a science magazine. I saw an article about him, and I'm like, oh my. Like, that's so cool. All of the stuff he does is really, really, really like groundbreaking in prosthetic technology.
That sounds like something you're going to be.
You could drive to MIT and in 2.5 hours you can be there.
Are you checking Google Maps?
No, I mean I've driven it and you're a half hour away from
In
me.
fact, Aditi, he might be a willing subject for you at some time, especially because he, I'm serious. Why wouldn't he? I think
He
anyway, keep trying
is.
to write to him. If he's not responded yet, keep trying because in fact, maybe send him this podcast later
Oh, yeah.
or send him your one of your videos that you did for one of the challenges you did. But I agree with Jake that I think it's important to make clear up front this is not a normal hydraulics because people might, oh yeah, okay, and turn it off if they think that's what it is. It's not, and I think that makes it pretty exceptional and just definitely out of the box thinking that why didn't somebody do that before? But somebody who's a double amputee and who has is kind of a progressive thinker about this. That's kind of the exact kind of person you need
Just
on
crossed
your
on the
team.
spam emailing.
Yes. Well, Didi, it has been a pleasure to talk to you today and to learn about your work. And I'm hoping that you can find some more connections that will help you get to that next step where you can take it out and do some even limited trials, whether it's on dogs or other animals or whether it's on people. Anything moving it forward and testing it is a good thing to do because you're going to need to do that. Because as soon as you get, great at making these for kids, somebody with their beloved dog kid is going to come to you and ask anyway. So you might as well just get that one out of the way ahead of time, right?
Yep.
Anything that
Always,
we can.
always room for dogs.
Anything that we can do to help ever or connect you to, I've made a note because I think I know somebody up at one of the Boston universities that's doing some work with them that might maybe have a connection. I know it's not like in your backyard, but at least it's on your side of the world compared to Ohio, something like that. So as soon as I get off here and once the podcast is finished, I'm going to send it to my friend and he might be able to find some additional connections for you too. So, wonderful, wonderful work, and it's so meaningful. And all
Thank you so
because of
much.
a cool TV show.
Being a nerd pays off.
I think it does. All right. Thank you, Didi. And just again, an announcement. The next Global Innovation Field Trip happens on October 14th, 15th. Opportunity for young innovators across the world to come on, tell your innovation story to a global audience. Doesn't cost you anything. And to reach us, you would just write to globalinnovationfieldtrip@gmail.com. We'll also have another one in January, April, July, and next October too, every quarter. And if you are interested in the participating, or your students from your country are interested in participating in the Global Innovation Challenge. Deadline for registration is September 10th. So please reach out to inventfuture.global to learn more. And Mr. Jake Mendelson will connect with you there and help you out. And thank you all for joining us at the Innovation World podcast series. Bye bye.
Thank you for joining us today for the Innovation World podcast. Innovation World is your go-to source for all things innovation, invention, and entrepreneurship. Our website is www.innovationworld.org.